Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The name of this program is called World Watchers. It's broadcast number 707, June the 24th, 1985. Are you getting enough news each day? How is it grabbing you? Isn't it horrendous? And what do you make of all of this? It is unbelievable. The most intelligent remark that I read in the newspaper quotation of all these events this past week, what came out of Mehmet Ali Aja, the gentleman who's charged Bulgarians and Turks with trying to plot the death of John Paul II, Pope John Paul II. There were a lot of discrepancies in his trial, and the judge is making note of all of them and called attention to it. And then Aja made the following statement in quotes, "I am sometimes forced to invent things to be able to respond to the outside world." And that was his explanation for a lot of his discrepancies. And I think that about explains what is going on with the events taking place today. Later in the trial, the prosecutor, Mr. Marini, shouted at Aja about these inconsistencies and what he is saying. And he said, you continue to say things that are not true. And Aja responded, "The facts are extremely complicated. In the past, there were some inventions on my part, but now I am telling the truth." And why would you accept the Bossert's opinions of Joseph Mengele or the Bonn government or the CIA identification of Mengele? Why would you accept the stories of the hostage crisis or the downing of the airplane, the Air India from Canada on way to London and then India? Why accept the survivalist accounts that are in the newspaper out here in California? And many of you aren't getting the full details of that story. Why would you accept the background of all of these major stories that are in the news today? The Indian airline, Aja's trial, the Mengele story, the survivalist, and the hostage crisis. Disinformation has been so woven into the fabric of our lives. The very few people, unless they want to make a study of it, are or will ever be able to untangle the events as they come down so swiftly from now on. I said May 1st would be the beginning. We were warned about that by the various parties who were involved in all the five incidences that I just listed that are in the news today. Now try to keep up with them. Quickly, before I go into some of these subjects, and I want to do most of the evening on Joseph Mengele, I mentioned last week that Helene von Damm, our ambassador to Vienna, it was going to be leaving that post, in spite of the fact that 1 week earlier, Ronald Reagan listed her among three ambassadors that would keep in their position, even though he knew she had married a Viennese person. But von Damm is leaving as ambassador, and within days of that announcement, with about 2 or 3 days later, came the announcement that the Bank of America is closing their branch in Bolivia. Now, I know they're not doing well. They've lost a lot of money. I once read an account of $39 million. It may be more. But when the Cocaine King left, when Klaus Barbie left, and Barbie's cocaine links go directly to Bolivia and Brazil and to Joseph Mengele, the current Joseph Mengele, it's not coincidental that this particular branch was pulled out. The Bank of America is closing out of Bolivia at the same time that Helene von Damm is leaving as ambassador to Vienna. She'll stay there until the end of the year. But Christian von Damm is, according to my records, her third husband. She calls it her second husband, but they both have the same name. So as of this week, they're going to both waltz out together, the Viennese waltz from Austria and from Bolivia, and those people were both in the news today. This week, rather, I don't think it's a coincidence. I do want to just pass over quickly a few comments about the death of the up at Calaveras County in California, the group known as the survivalists. Leonard Lake, who ate the cyanide pill, died, of course, right on the spot before he was taken to explain 25 or 6 or more murders. The chief person with him, Charles Ng, N-G, left the country. He was escorted to the airport by Lake's ex-wife, who was with him up until the moment all of these events were exposed. It's her parents' property where these deaths are taking place or were taking place, and the bunker was located, and her father was providing trucks for Leonard Lake and Charles Ng. very heavily involved in this. The ex-wife was allowed to leave the country yesterday, according to the newspapers. So she and Charles Ng have left. Now, these American Death Squad, these survivalists, are linked to our Defense Department, to the CIA, to Nazi connections around the world, and it isn't any coincidence that the two major people walked out of this country. Several other people left this country and are involved with the Air Canada, the Indian airline, pardon me, crash that took place this week. The Soldier of Fortune magazine has an article on Otto Skorzeny this month. They had one last month. Buy it on the stand. It's July 1985. Soldier of Fortune began in 1975, and that was at the time of the death. The same year that Otto Skorzeny died, Soldier of Fortune began, and I believe they continued with the same process of sending mercenaries, this time advertising them in the magazine, and the tradition of Skorzeny fighting these battles overseas and using these death squads didn't end when Skorzeny died, but General John Singlau could set up Soldier of Fortune that same year. Incidentally, the issue of July 85 has a poster that you can order of G. Gordon Liddy holding a gun. Tough man, G. Gordon Liddy from Watergate. He was in our Treasury Department and the FBI. Here he graces the pages of this magazine, as well as a book review of Edward Luckvot's book, Coup d'etat in America. And I think Liddy and E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis and that whole group, James McCord, had a role in the coup d'etat in America. Don't pass up this issue, because there's a lot of material in there, and realize that there are connections between all of these people and the survivalist movement. We can't do them all in 1 hour this evening. David Emery sent me a newspaper article from Birmingham, Alabama. The Birmingham News accused Sikh plotters, another local link. And this is the story of the men that were accused of wanting to blow up nuclear power plants in India, being trained in Alabama with a man named Frank Camper from Dolomite and Alabama, and how they went to buy weapons from him. Well, the Morning News said this morning that two of the people involved taking credit for the explosion in Tokyo Sunday of the baggage compartment of the Canadian airline were one of them was a Sikh, or both of them, and they are also taking credit for the air crash over the Atlantic Ocean. And they came right out of Alabama and New Orleans, where they were trained to, in the future, break open the nuclear power plants in their homeland. Now, how do you feel? Do you feel comfortable with Americans teaching people from other countries to take over nuclear plants to destroy their own country? And if you don't feel comfortable with that, remember the broadcast, or maybe you don't, that I did 4 years ago in 1981, the night before Ronald Reagan was shot, March 29th. It was broadcast number 486, where I referred to the arrest at Crystal River, Florida, of the commando leader and 12 military men who would be used someday for taking over the United States and for a Reichstag type of operation, taking our nuclear power plants. Now, those were the same men, Mr. Camper and Mr. Lisenby, that were arrested and released. They were around our nuclear bases just the night before Reagan was shot. And I believe there was a connection to Alexander Haig and a planned coup in the United States. These two men, Camper and Lisenby, were also involved in the Dominica invasion plot, which then spreads their tentacles, as I've said many times, up to Canada, to all the top Nazis and Klan in the United States, and up to Richard Butler in Idaho, the Aryan Nations. And also, I've mentioned the role of John Connolly. His voice was on those tapes. And wealthy Texas people planning the Dominica invasion. The very Nazis that were going to put flags in Dominica that hunt people for killing, the same process that actually was happening up here in California, letting people out and then hunting them and killing them. Mr. Camper and Mr. Lisenby ran training school, Camper School, and out of there came Sikhs for destroying nuclear power plants. And here they were 4 years ago around our nuclear power plants, learning how to blow them up. And someday it will happen in the United States, because we not only let him off then and let him off every day, but we train to do over the world so we can destroy countries like India and the United States. And of course, they link back to John Connolly, to that expose in the Torbett document, to the Permandex operation, otherwise known as the British American Canadian Corporation, and up in Canada, is a hotbed of trained Indian, Sikh assassins, to do exactly a continuation of what the Permandex was set up to do within hours of when World War II was over. As I say, you can get that back broadcast, or if you have it, look it up. It was Christian Science Monitor had an article September 20th, 1981, Mercenaries Train in Alabama Woods, and that had to do with the Dominican invasion, and these were the same people that I'm talking about that originally surfaced at Crystal River. And in April 81, a gentleman, Mr. Lisenby, who was trained by Franklin Camper, and Franklin Camper were picked up in Florida with silencer in their car, going to do a murder job in the United States. And of course, they were never kept in jail. They got off, and now they're training overseas. And so if you want a trip to India and you get on a plane, just think of the connections back to the Kennedy assassination, to John Connolly, to all these events, and wonder if all the what seemed like isolated arrests and incidences that took place in the past 14 years that I talked about, think of their connections and how now it's melding together, and the relationship of these disparate groups becomes more visible, and I've been trying to warn about them for a long, long time. Now, in India, there is a trial going on for the people that killed Mrs. Gandhi. A listener sent me this from the San Jose Mercury News. Gandhi killing parallel made to Kennedy assassination. And what the defendants are saying was that the man who was killed on the spot, his name is Beant Singh, B-E-A-N-T, and then they all use, the Hindus, the S-I-N-G-H as their last name. Mr. Beant was killed on the spot, and the men who shot him as an excuse to end that violence when Mrs. Gandhi was killed were actually the people that were involved in the murder. And this San Jose Mercury News story, Associated Press says, in political murders, normally the assassins are kept quiet. There is a hidden hand here. The conspiracy is not these men, but the men who killed Beant Singh. They fired the shots in order to silence them. The real men who knew everything, the real man who knew why he was there, is dead. And they accuse this operation of being identical to when Lee Harvey Oswald was shot, because if Oswald were alive or Beant were not alive, you'd know about the conspiracy. Now, one more item before I go on to Mehmet Ajab and the Mengele story. The hijacker incident is a complicated covert action, I believe, that smacks of a lot of reasons for coming down at this time, very carefully staged. One was to attack Greece as not safe. They're taking our NATO bases away, the military bases, and it is a democracy like India, so we have to kill those non-aligned democracies I've mentioned before. The other is an excuse to invade Iran that we lost to the Shah. The third excuse is to get more money and more agents for the CIA to promote that. And the other is to act tough and get ready to invade countries because we can say there's a hint that somebody there is going to do something to us. Getting ready for the Anschluss, Hitler could go into Czechoslovakia and Poland and Belgium, and he maybe didn't even need an excuse now. Now we're a country of law, ha-ha, so we have to have an excuse, and all of this is coming together. The radio announced today, and I'm sure many of you heard it, that airplane leaving Athens did not have the luggage put on by the two hijackers. The luggage, the guns and the weapons and the arsenal, they had some hand pieces. The actual weapons for the hijacking were put on in Cairo, Egypt, and were taken into the airport in Greece. The airport wasn't emptied out. San Francisco Chronicle Sunday paper shows a cartoon of an airport security man, and across the side it says Athens Airport. He's saying, have a nice flight, and here are five people armed with knives and daggers and planes and all kinds of bullets, luggage over their shoulder and hands, ready to do battle. That airplane went through the detectors properly, and this has been 2 weeks of telling people, cancel your trips to Greece, don't take a vacation, would you go to Greece, the most disgusting propaganda. Now, I just want to do a few minutes on Ajah and the trial there, because This is a giant story of fabrication woven, identical to the Kennedy assassination plot, out of fabric that cannot hold together, won't hold together. But the people that have been pushing this so hard have stayed with that propaganda line that the Bulgarians and the Soviets plan to kill John Paul II. It's a question of the Antichrist, the Eastern Europe, the Antichrist versus Christ. And I just want to run down quickly what unfolded in the past pertinent to this week's information about the story. Aja was visited in the cell in December 81 by two members of the Secret Service. The Masonic Lodge scandal broke in May of 81, just right after the Pope had been shot. And that instigated a search for a secret government behind the regular government that was existing in Italy, identical to the secret team we have that run behind the Congress and the elected officials and make decisions to manipulate us towards this total fascist state. Now, Judge Martella wrote in a writ of indictment, this is December 81, that two agents of the Secret Service had visited Aja in jail. But he said the evidence offered by the agencies, identical to our CIA, removes any suspicion of undue influence, which turns out to be a lie because it turns out that those two agents of the Secret Service were put in there with the help of mafia enforcers to coach Aja to the Bulgarian Soviet story in exchange for his release. Incidentally, Martello, I forget now whether he had a hit-run accident or a bomb explosion. He almost died. Some people, I believe, died with him. I'll have to look up that information just a few months ago. But he would be pivotal to this, and he still is. But in 1981, he noticed that these people were, in fact, with Aja. Now, right after their visit with Aja in December 81, a short time later, actually in January 83, is a short time in Aja's experiences, a lifetime in jail he's to face. He was told in January 83, you can get out of your security. He got permission to leave. He had been in isolation, had special food so he wouldn't be poisoned, and he refused. And he said, this is in the San Francisco Chronicle, I would be killed by the Camorra. The Camorra are specifically the mafia from the Naples area. Now, there's no Camorra in Bulgaria, and there's no Camorra in the Soviet Union. And if he was put there by the Eastern Europeans, he had nothing to fear by the Italians in the jail who would want to kill him. And there were a lot of Italian mafia there, but he wasn't implicating them in this particular murder plot against the Pope. October the 15th, 1984, that's a year and a half later, Tommaso Busetti, a mafia enforcer, was extradited from Brazil. I mentioned him last week in his role in beginning just recently to link Bolivia and Brazil and the narcotic traffic, which is a tie-in between Klaus Barbie and the current Joseph Mengele. Of course, you know how I feel about that. We'll go into it in a second. But Tommaso Busetti was extradited. And instead of holding the silence that these people usually do, the kiss of death if they talk, he began to expose in October 84 the relationship of the mafia, the Camorra that Aja had feared and the men that had visited Aja, to the politics of Italy, specifically to the P2, the Masonic Lodge, the Banco Ambrosiano, which links to the Vatican Bank, to Roberta Calvi, Licio Gelli, and also the Red Brigades, which was always allegedly a leftist group, but set up by the P2, and he began to talk about that. And this year, it was revealed in our New York Times in February of 85 that as far back as November of 84, Busetti was making connections of the cocaine traffic, and at that time, Barbie had already been arrested, and the bulk of the Bolivian narcotics was now to flow into Brazil, and there was a good reason to end the Mengele case quickly, because Busetti knows those networks and how they go to New York and to the United States and to West Germany and through Italy, and he was and is beginning to talk about these things. Just this year, moving on to 1985, March 85, Francisco Pazienza was arrested. He is the kingpin of the links to Ronald Reagan, to Michael Ledeen, Alexander Haig, to a special super fund. to the re-election of Ronald Reagan. And in 2 weeks, I want to do maybe 1 hour, if I can, just on Francisco Pazienza. But he was arrested in New York City, and we'll detail that later. And his links are so heavily involved to those people who are fabricating this Bulgarian Soviet story that it is interesting that once Pazienza was arrested, Aja realized, and the story broke, that it was Pazienza who was setting this up for him and had promised him he would be free. And just last week he was saying in the court, here's a man who promised me that he'd give me a French passport to go to Gaddafi, and it was Gaddafi Pazienza used to smear Billy Carter in New Republic magazine just before the elections, and I'll detail that for you later. Aja is saying, look, this man promised me a passport, promised me freedom. Now he's in a jail in New York City. But the funny story, and it is really funny, is the way that Pazienza came up in the court trial. The judge wanted Aja to be quiet this past week. There was a lot of noise and confusion. And there's two trial judges, and one yelled, Pazienza, Pazienza, meaning peace and quiet. And with that, Mr. Aja on the stand yells, yes, it was Francisco Pazienza. And, of course, the rest will just be history. That is the end of the case. It was a fluke, a double entendre. The judge, in asking for peace and quiet, brought out of Aja the name and connections to all those people who, for the last 4 years, have pushed the lie of the Bulgarian Soviet plans to kill the Pope. But just quickly, in chronological order, after the arrest of Pazienza, 2 weeks later, there was a bust, according to the Philadelphia Inquirer, April the 4th, into the offices of Shearson American Express in Philadelphia. Now, they took hundreds of business records. They investigated alleged unreported cash transactions, money laundering, with Tommaso Busetti talking about the money laundering in a court in Italy, and with Mr. Francisco Pazienza being arrested in New York City. They quickly went into the Philadelphia office. Now, part of the Shearson American Express on the board is Henry Kissinger. Also on the board is Gerald Ford. On the board is Mario Di Urso, D'Urso, from Italy, who is on the also on the board of Kissinger Associates. And Kissinger, of course, is a member of the P2 Lodge out of Monte Carlo. Close associations to that, and his name has been brought up in regard to having a part with killing Aldo Moro, and Mrs. Moro thought he was involved in having her husband killed, and Mrs. Roberta Calvi has blamed Pazienza for the murder of Roberta Calvi, and the offices were raided for money transactions of the P2, of the Masonic Lodge, probably out of Philadelphia, these strong connections, because it all came just weeks after Busetti and Pazienza. One was talking in Italy, the other was arrested in New York City, and those offices were raided. Now, June the 17th, and I mentioned this last week on the broadcast, Aja said that he was offered security by the P2, the propaganda duo Licio Gelli. He said they would free him. That was a major breakthrough, bringing Aja's role of changing his story to implicate the Russians and the Eastern Bloc, the Bulgarians, to the right-wing fascist, Licio Gelli, the head of the Italian security police, the Nazi, a member of the Waffen-SS, wanting to free him. That sort of doesn't sound like the Russians would want to use Aja for an assassination. And then the right-wing are promising him his security. They'd stay away from him, I should think. June the 17th is the day that Aja implicated Pazienza and brought in the story of the passport and Gaddafi and how he wanted to get out of jail and said, now he's in jail and can't get out, meaning Pazienza. How can he help me? And I'll go into the details of that dialogue next week. But as I say, I want to do more on Mengele, so I'll go through the fine lines. I just want to go into certain points about this. Now, incidentally, another mob figure, very important, besides Mr. Busada is talking, Mr. Pandico, Giovanni Pandico, P-A-N-D-I-C-O. And on the 18th of June of this week, talk about news gushing, he is giving testimony about the link of the mafia, the Naples mafia, the Camorra, that threatened Aja and were coaching him, the link of the mafia to the P2 and how they went into the prison and persuaded Aja to change his testimony and implicate the Bulgarians. Now, Pendeco is breaking the rules, as have many people obeyed them. When a member of the family is murdered, a brother, a mother, and relatives, they keep quiet because that's a message to shut up. Now, Mr. Pendeco said, my mother was murdered 2 weeks ago. I haven't anything to live for, and I'm going to tell you. He said that Aja was coached in jail by leaders of the Camorra, and this is what Judge Martella was denying, that while in prison they instructed him, the mafia did, and the drug dealers, but they were put in the cell by the Italian intelligence system, equivalent to our CIA. They persuaded him to implicate the Soviets and Bulgarian, and if Aja changed his testimony, he would be free, and they would transfer him. And if he didn't do it, they would put a mob boss, a suspected assassination hit on Aja, with him, and that's what they told him. Now, that verifies exactly what Aja was saying in 1981, that he didn't want to be out of his cell, or pardon me, 1983, because he would be killed. The threat is there. Mr. Pendeco's story is there. And I'll take it point by point that he implicated the equivalent of our CIA, the Italian intelligence, and the threats on Aja. Now, June the 18th, as Pendeco was talking, he brought in all the details of the Italian government, of politicians, not all, but he's linking the politicians to the mafia, to the intelligence community. And that is the important point of this story. This is what we have in the United States, the intelligence operation, the CIA and the DIA, the mafia and the drug dealers and the members of Congress and the White House, and even up to the Supreme Court. These three agencies have been in collusion, and what for? A, to rearm Germany, the German munitions cartel. B, make a war against Russia. And C, win the Christ versus the Antichrist. This has been building up. And so the intelligence, the mafia, and these secret societies like our secret government worked with Aja. It's identical to the United States coups or the plans to kill the Pope and then go into the Soviet Union on the basis of fighting the Antichrist. Now, the links between Mehmet Aja and the secret Super S group with the mafia, as I say, is opening up in court, and he's using names, and Francisco Pazienza came out of him very quickly, and when the judge said Pazienza, I think that was just about one of the most interesting stories that I've seen in a long, long time. Now, Aja is trying to say, after his story unravels, a different day in court, I deny I was coached to make a deal to implicate the Soviet Union. But of course he has to deny it. He has to say my story is true. But interestingly enough, Aja brought up the point, and this is the last point I just want to make on this subject, and I'll repeat it again later. It's so important. He said that he was writing to the American embassy, which our embassy was denying, to the attachés, and he said the information he had, or what he was doing, was so important. He said, in quotes, the American embassy does not get mixed up in affairs as important as this. This is so, for someone in from the White House, if you think about it, that the White House should take care of his affairs. Now, why the White House? Because Francisco Pazienza and Licio Gelli delivered votes to Ronald Reagan. They got Ronald Reagan in office. They promised Aja, he thought, according to the newspapers, he says he thought that he would be in America. He certainly thought he might even go to the Vatican. He promised, he said, they were thinking of a transfer to the Vatican. Imagine Aja in the Vatican when this was over. And then he said this has something to do with a political solution. They were working with Aja for a political solution to these events. And it has to do with our White House. Nobody is closer to the White House than Alexander Haig, Fritz Kramer, Henry Kissinger, Licio Gelli, Michael Ledeen, Claire Sterling, Arnaud de Borchgrave, Mr. Heine, the whole CIA group that have worked with this fabric to put it together. He felt they owe him something, that they would take him to the United States or into the Vatican. Aja said, in quotes, I was just acting in line with the external situation. I was playing, naturally, a double game, let's say. People were thinking about not having a trial. He was promised all these various things, that he would be able to prove these connections, and they didn't need a trial. And he is carrying on this dialogue. And in between all of this Jesus Christ stuff, Aja is making sense, and the names he's using are making sense. And not only is Aja making sense when he talks and sounds crazy, I thought his craziness would throw out the case, but they didn't have time to throw it out before he cracked. He's making sense. He's making connections. The arrest of Pazienza in New York is making connections. Mr. Posada in Rome talking, and the various trials that are going on with the drug dealer in Rome who's admitting, and whose mother died, that he's doing this and he doesn't care anymore. This is the end of the first half of this broadcast of World Watchers, and then we'll go on to Joseph Mengele for the remaining 30 minutes.